Those of you who've seen me before are aware that I have these extremely dynamic, breathtaking beginnings to my set. And if it's not one thing, it's my legs. Michael's smart. He stands up. I'm still struggling with sitting down, especially with finding the right stool, but changes from night to night. Either that or my ass changes from night to night. This is the difficult one right here, though. I'm all right to about here. I don't need the rest. Well, I shouldn't say that. At this moment, I don't need the rest. And what happens with this one is that it finds its own rhythm, regardless of what the tune might be going. You can't help but notice that. And in the time it takes me to get this one right, then the tune's off. I've been made a fool again, once again, by my own foot. Try to avoid that this evening. This is the title cut from my new record album called Regards from Chuck Pink, which is for sale, by the way. And I should add that this tune is not on the record, but on the record that I recorded over 10 years ago. And obviously, I'm very fond of this title. Thank you. integral part of my set from year to year. I continue to be fascinated and repelled. This is as visual as my set gets. That's why I'm getting busy. I'm sure something happened 20 years ago, but not what I want to tell you about. a friend of mine and I decided, for reasons that were obscure and have remained obscure even today, decided to drive to Yuma, Arizona. Frozen tamale factory in Minot, North Dakota, and had bloomed as an entrepreneur into a guy with several trucks, all of them with his picture inside of it, holding one tamale in his hand with a sort of entrepreneurial leer on his face. And if you want to learn about this guy, who's a terrific human being, by the way, you should read it, but you should. I mean, it's available somewhere, maybe, if you're unlucky enough. You can read a book called Why Not My Not, which was written by a clergy in an attempt to drive this guy and some other people out of town. And the frozen tamale factory was his vengeance upon my not. But I'm digressing. There was a play made about this thing, called, of course, Why Not My Own. We drove to Yuma, and we realized about halfway there two things. One was, we didn't want to go to Yuma, and secondly, we didn't want to be spending that much time with each other. And not only that, we were in a valley, which had a somewhere outside of Yuma, which is forever, by the way, there's a desert, and it's flat, featureless, and deadly. And it's, because it's so hot and dry, and the only things that live there are cold blooded. You see movies of them surviving by lifting one foot off the ground and molting and stuff like that. No way to live, if you ask me. And they can have it if they want it. I don't want it. So here. Flaps flaps so your ears don't get cold. a shit wagon behind him, and his chin was sort of jutting out facing his destiny, you know. And again, two things. Only, you know, there were about two things I could think of. One was that he was cold, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. That may have been it, actually. A man with a very puny thyroid, you know. The other was that he was about to die, and that made a lot of sense. We drop on to Yuma. Tell me something about us. Like I said, we were not getting along. The last thing we needed was some pre-cadaver in the back. Got to Yuma, we found out what Yuma was like, and it was what we'd begun to expect it was like, so we ran into San Luis, Mexico. It was not much better, but it was at least busier. And a couple weeks later, we drove back to Minnesota. Passed through the same area, and the same guy on the other side of the road now was standing there, vertical facing his destiny, and I was in the other direction, by the way. And so I burst into song. Melting, merging with the silica beneath them. drying out and shredding and sunlight. I'm easily amused.
Thank you.
father who began his employed life as a guy, began his life, his first job was selling chipped beef door to door in northern Minnesota, sort of food that was invented during World War II for people who were about to die, I believe. It tells you a lot about us that it just caught on. It was a real favorite food here for a while. I think you can still get it, can't you? Chipped beef?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, And, he never bought a Volkswagen dealership, but I think he had the same impulse that some people did when he bought those when he decided to go into chipped beef. He saw a future in it and thought that he could make a fortune, but unfortunately, that wasn't the case. My mother thought that I should, at that time, be spending a lot of time with my dad so we could get to know each other. And my dad was not so much of that opinion, as you may have already detected. And so I rode along in the back seat with the chipped beef as we drove around at these mom and pop restaurants and we tried to peddle this stuff. And when I heard years later about bonding and imprinting, I realized one strong possibility where this terrible vacancy I've always felt in my life may have come from. Because at some point, my dad gave up selling chipped beef, and the chipped beef that I'd ridden around with all that time in the back seat suddenly disappeared. Since I was 2 years old and probably couldn't tell the difference between my dad and a fire hydrant, I couldn't tell the difference between chipped beef and a brother or a sister. I'm convinced of this. If it weren't for the chipped beef, I probably wouldn't play guitar, because it answers the same need that the chipped beef filled upon me. I've always learned things up here, and now I know why I play guitar. And my dad went from there to a sort of a career as a golf professional, and he won the Navy Championship in 45. There's a picture of him doing during an exhibition match with Johnny Weissmuller, Sam Snead, and Mickey Rooney, standing around looking like, what the hell am I doing with these guys? Every one of them looking like that. Mickey Rooney was the least golfer of the bunch, by the way. Could not sell the talent that he had had since anybody can remember, including himself, which is sleep. Marlowe's people, one of those who have little legends built around them, usually filial legends that don't get outside, the immediate neighborhood, because it's hard really to recognize somebody who's asleep before being asleep. But my mother I've seen him fall asleep standing up on a city bus. He's fallen asleep behind the wheel so many times that it's apparent to everybody that there's no effort involved. Even when his life's at stake, he'd rather take a nap. It may be another reason for the vacancy I felt in my life, falling asleep while I was back there with the chippy, careening off into the skeg. What do they call it? Muskeg. Into the muskeg. Glock, swamp glock. He loves mosquitoes. Disease. retired, and you could indulge this habit. And not that he couldn't indulge it when he was in the VA, but he could read it more well than he was not working anymore. And they retired in Virginia to a place on Persimmon Circle, and one afternoon, late on Sunday afternoon, he decided to go to sleep. And to decide such a thing for him, man, this was heavy. I mean, he needed it, he wanted it. It wasn't just the usual sort of sneeze kind of reflex. So he got up, he went into the bedroom, took off his clothes and his shoes, and crawled into bed and conked out. And he woke up about an hour later, convinced, and this has happened to all of us, convinced that it was morning and he'd been in bed all night long by the time he got up, which was always a depressing moment for him. He got up, walked into the kitchen where my mother happened to be dorking around doing whatever she was doing in the kitchen. And he said, "What's for breakfast?" Which is a large non sequitur, you know, at 5:30 in the afternoon. He's familiar with this kind of approach to life. My dad doesn't take a philosophical view, you know, it's either on or it's off. If he has to think about it, he'd rather take a nap. So she said, "How about some eggs?" And he said, "Fine." They sat down at the kitchen table to eat. And they were sort of saying things to one another. And she looked at him, and he looked at her, and then he looked over her shoulder and through the window into the outdoors where it was getting darker outside. And for a guy with, you know, without the consolation of philosophy, my dad, whose name is Larry, by the way, decided that the world was coming to an end. That alone would wake most people up. But the part that I like about this is that he decided not to tell his wife. I can't get over that. I really can't. He didn't want to worry. So he got up. The most manly thing he could think to do was to get up and get in the car and drive around the neighborhood and see what everybody else was doing. Of course, by now it was really getting dark out. It was late on a Sunday, and people were lining up and going into church, which struck such a note of terror in him. He kind of woke up and dragged himself back home. So this is for him. It's called the Late Song. Thank you. Too bad it ended so ugly. that she had to go this way. And the wind is blowing cold tonight. So good night, Louise, good night.
Finish this set. I'd like to thank you all for coming out and seeing this show tonight.
short medley of some of the first slide stuff there. Thank you.